Hey, All Sides listeners, I'm Steve Brown, the co-host of WOSU's new political podcast, Snollygoster. Every week, we'll talk to newsmakers, reporters, and lots of other smart people to get the latest on politics from around Columbus and the rest of the state. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The Southern Poverty Law Center in a recent survey found that fewer than 1 in 10 high school seniors, that's fewer than 1 in 10, properly identify slavery as the main cause of the American Civil War. Fewer than 3 in 10 understood that the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, not the Emancipation Proclamation, ended the legal enslavement of blacks in the United States. Today, we're talking about what the results of this report mean about our ability as a nation to talk about issues of racism today. Joining us by phone is Director of the Southern Poverty Law Center, Teaching Tolerance Division, Maureen Costello. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Ann. Glad to be here.
And also with us, Ohio State historian Hassan Kwame Jeffries. Professor Jeffries specializes in African American history. He's done a lot of speaking lately. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Both Professor Jeffries and Maureen Costello will participate in a public conversation and discussion about teaching American slavery next week at the Bexley Public Library. For more information, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Hassan, you write about and talk about the issue of hard history. As a historian, there's the hard history of American slavery. There's the hard history of the Nazis in Germany. Talk about what we mean by the hard history.
Well, but certainly in the American context, we have these periods or eras or moments in American history that are hard for us to wrap our minds around looking back at it. They're hard to talk about. They're hard to teach. They're hard to comprehend. Slavery, for example, in this instance, I mean, it's hard to fathom the kind of inhumanity that is really at the heart of American slavery. It's hard to talk about and teach white supremacy and what it meant. It's hard to talk about those framers of the Constitution, the founders of this country who embraced slavery, who embraced white supremacy. So when we're talking about sort of hard history and the hard history of American slavery, we're really talking about this sort of this period, this era in American history that is still resonates, that is still speaks to us today, that still has a legacy that we are living through today that is just hard for us to talk about and teach in the classroom and in our everyday lives.
Maureen Costello, is the legacy or is what we're left with today at this point in history, is it a function of the hardness of the topic?
I think that to some degree it is, or let's put it this way. I think our failure to write the legacy is a function of the hardness of the topic. We've softened the topic in school, and we've reduced it to a simple formulation, which is we had this terrible institution, but then we kind of learned better, and we ended it. And, of course, we ended it because not only of the war, but because of the abolitionists and also because of people like Harriet Tubman, who led her people out of slavery. And now we are who we really were meant to be, which is a good people. And if that's your legacy, if that's your story, then it's really hard to look at the modern manifestations of the legacy, which are continuing segregation, continual racist structures in policing or in education, and disparate outcomes, because we want to tell a story about ourselves as good people.
We focus, when we talk about American history, particularly as children, Hassan Jeffries, we focus on what the white guys were doing. How would that change if we righted the balance?
So we can still focus on what the white guys were doing, but we have to put it in the proper historical context. So on the one hand, it's not just about chopping down cherry trees. It's about sort of the ways in which the white guys, if you will, the founding fathers, are wholly dependent upon the institution of slavery to lay the foundation for this nation. But of course, we wouldn't just stop there. Part of what we want to do when talking about hard history and American slavery is talk about it accurately and honestly. And so when you're talking about that era in American history, it is moving beyond just the white guys. It is talking about enslaved people. It is talking about working class and poor white people. It is talking about Native Americans. And when you do that, then you can no longer sort of pass by the era by simply saying, well, you know, they were men of their times. No, because there were other people in those times who viewed what was going on as immoral, as wrong, and worked hard and fought hard against it.
You know, Maureen Costello, when I think about this, I think there's it's more and more and more, and I think it's good. But it, does it mean less of something else?
I certainly hope not. Or rather, what I mean, I'm laughing because what we've seen is less and less history in
general,
classrooms
exactly.
in the last 15 or
the
20 years.
The pie has shrunk, right?
The pie has shrunk at the expense of, you know, I can go into other topics here, but at the expense of math and literacy and testing. My argument would be is that we're more prepared for democracy. We're better able to govern ourselves and be good citizens if we spend more time talking about honest and accurate history from early ages. So I would hope that, and I think that there are lots of places to do it in ways that you can integrate the teaching of history with reading, for instance. You have to read about something.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it in such a way that you're not necessarily giving up something else because what we gain is so important.
How young? You surveyed 1,000 American high school seniors for this. What sense did you get about where the disconnect starts or where we're not even getting it connected, Maureen?
We think the disconnect starts really early because besides surveying students, we also looked at state standards, we looked at textbooks, and we surveyed teachers. And part of the problem is that we actually set ourselves up to have to unteach what children are taught in kindergarten and first grade. No other subject is like this. In math, you learn to count, and then you learn to add, and then you learn to subtract, and then you use those functions and those skills to learn multiplication and learn algebra. In social studies and American history, we learn things that are patently false at the beginning.
Such as, give us an example what you mean.
Well, we, for instance, teach kids about Harriet Tubman in kindergarten often, but we do not teach about slavery until fourth and fifth grade. So that may not be patently false. It's out of context.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of what exactly was she doing? But what it does is it lays down a kind of narrative, a schema, if you will, of, you know, of a series of heroes. We learn about Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass, Martin Luther King, and Rosa Parks, usually before we talk about slavery, segregation, or Jim Crow, if in fact we ever talk about slavery and Jim Crow. And every high school teacher I talk to, and I know Hassan has had this experience as well, talks about the fact that when they really do try to talk about slavery, what they confront is a classroom of students who say, whoa, this isn't what I was taught. Stuff like the civil Lincoln freed the slaves, or the worst kinds of tropes, which is that, you know, most slaves really had it okay. They were better off than northern workers, for instance. There's a lot of bad information out there.
Is there a standard, Hassan Jeffries, that we're talking about here that, you know, is there a template for teachers, you know, as early as kindergarten to do it the right way?
Well, that's what the Southern Poverty Law Center has been
is working on.
Gotcha.
So
this framework and the report, Teaching Hard History of American Slavery, offers a framework that's focused right now on the high school grades. But going forward, and Maureen can certainly talk more about this, is moving it down. Because as she pointed out, when it comes to social studies and American history in particular, we have to do the scaffolding that we do in other subjects. We don't wait. We don't drop calculus on kids in high school having never taught them the basic building blocks of math in elementary
uh-huh.
school going forward. And we have to do the same thing with history and with American slavery and the African-American experience. We have to talk about this honestly, upfront. You can't just say, you know, a Harriet Tubman and a Frederick Douglass did such wonderful things. And the kids are like, well, why are they doing such, what are they fighting against if you never actually introduce the context, provide the context that is the basis of American, the American journey in the first place?
You know, one of the things that people bring up all the time is that kids at very young ages, it would be traumatic to describe the horrors and the inhumanity of human enslavement in the United States. Maureen Costello, what do we know about what kids are capable of understanding and embracing and taking away?
We know that children, even very, very young children, can explore deep philosophical questions, and you can do it without traumatizing them. As Hassan said, it's about scaffolding. I mean, you would not want to introduce a kindergartner to that famous photograph of an enslaved man and his whipped back full of scars. But I think that you can start talking about unfairness, and you can start talking about labor systems, because kindergartners talk all the time, you know, about who's the workers in their neighborhoods, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And you can talk about how it wasn't always this way, and introduce the notion that some people are forced to do things that they, you know, did not want to do. So there is a way to build this in age-appropriate ways. That's one thing. Nobody wants to traumatize kids. On the other hand, our history is traumatic. And so the job of teachers is to figure out how to tell the truth in a way that makes children strong and that doesn't defeat them. And there's actually been a lot of really good studies that say that when you allow children to see that, you know, unfairness existed in the past because they know it exists in the present, that you actually are able to equip them much better to be resilient, to be problem solvers, and especially if you're also showing them ways that people use their agency, even if their agency was limited. And that means that, for instance, you talk about how enslaved people made use of their minimal spare time, or how they maybe gathered together to form community gardens or do some hunting, and how they developed a more communal culture. So there are ways to do this that are age appropriate and that build resilience and are not traumatic.
Hassan, by the time they get to college, is there still that sticker shock of what the cost of slavery had for the United States?
No, absolutely. When I see them, I know that we're not doing a good job in our K-12 education, public or private, because when I get them, even the best and brightest here at Ohio State, I have more than a few, the majority, I would say, actually, are shocked and surprised by the things that we are bringing up and talking about in class with regard to American slavery, with regard to the founding fathers. Within the first couple of weeks, I show a couple of documentaries and films. I mean, they are blown away having to reconsider, literally saying, Dr. Jeffries, I have to reconsider what I thought about Thomas Jefferson.
Is this African-Americans and whites and all different stripes?
It's across the board because we're all going through the same educational system.
I wanted to ask you what sort of interest level there is across the board in what you teach.
Oh, it's extremely high.
Okay.
From the students in particular. But it's interesting. The students get more interested the more we talk about it in class, because they have been exposed to it in ways that don't register, don't make sense. It's oversimplified. It's uninteresting. And it has no bearing.
It's disconnected.
It's disconnected to the present, right?
Yeah.
I mean, their interest in what they have learned is very low. But once we begin to talk about it accurately and honestly, and the connections and the links and what it was and how it really helps to helps them understand sort of their world today, then their interest just leaps off the charts.
We will continue our conversation. You've just heard from Ohio State historian Hassan Jeffries. Also with us, Maureen Costello. She's director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Teaching Tolerance Division. They've produced a new study that shows that just 1 in 10 high school seniors understand, you know, that the 13th Amendment to the Constitution ended legal enslavement of blacks, not the Emancipation Proclamation. There's a lot more to talk about. Stay with us. If you have a question or comment, we welcome your insights. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. When it comes to the topic of the role of slavery in the history of the United States and how it is taught in American schools, the difference between what educators believe their students learn and what they retain is stark. According to a report from the Southern Poverty Law Center, of 1,000 high school seniors surveyed, fewer than half could identify the Middle Passage as the journey of enslaved Africans to North America. Without foundational knowledge, there's concern that Americans are ill-equipped to have the tough conversations called for now about race and racism. Still with us is director of the Southern Poverty Law Center Teaching Tolerance Division, Maureen Costello, and Ohio State historian Hassan Jeffries. Questions or comments about how the issue of slavery is taught in American schools, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And if you want to share some stories about how you learned about slavery growing up, we'd like to hear what you learned and how you learned it. Maybe it wasn't in school at all. 614-292-8513. Maureen, what did you hear from teachers about their misgivings about discussing these topics with their students?
You know, it's interesting. We asked teachers, do you feel capable? Are you confident about this? And they answered, 9 out of 10 said, oh, absolutely. But then we asked them more open questions like, well, what's your favorite lesson? What's the hardest part? And at that point, we really heard the kind of true story. A lot of them are afraid of what you mentioned. They're afraid of traumatizing students. We often have a real gap in our classrooms where the students sitting in the desks are students of color and the teachers are white. That racial dynamic is an issue. White teachers don't want to make their students of color feel either shame or anger. I might add that that's probably true of black teachers as well. There's that confusion of this is the past and this is the present. And I guess it's that awareness that, it's still not a level playing field. There are teachers who report that their white students resist accepting the history of racism that we have, and that they resist feeling being made to feel guilty. And of course, no teacher really wants to make a student feel guilty. And then there's also the worry that there's going to be racial tension. So, in other words, the entire concerns and discomfort are around our contemporary racial tensions.
Not around what actually happened back in the day.
No.
Should then the first conversation be, this is a tough thing to talk about? Let's talk.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that any teacher doing this needs to, first of all, be very, very comfortable talking about race, needs to acknowledge where they are in kind of the racial identity of America, which means that if you're white, you really have to recognize that you've benefited in some ways. One of the teachers that we worked with had something really wonderful to say. What she said, she says to her students early on is, look, you are not responsible at all for the racism that produced this history, the racism in the past, or even the racism that exists today. But if we still have it in 20 years, then you are responsible. And she really tries to absolve them right now. It's that idea that, we're looking at history, and you can look at it intellectually, but you also have to use it as kind of a moral compass for how you act in the future.
Hassan Jeffries, I remember a social studies lesson I had, and it was in grade school, and it was before seventh grade. That's all I remember. And it was about progress and the interstate highway system and how what a great thing that was and how they put these highways all around the big cities. And they never once, of course, mentioned the fact that they split up really critical neighborhoods across the country by doing that. And just that simple, that basic lack of knowledge about that basic thing, I look back and think how it would affect me if I knew more.
But that's the way we teach American history. I mean, we teach it as perpetual progress, that things are always getting better without cost to other people. And that whether it's, sort of the Eisenhower interstate system,
right,
and the displacement of neighborhoods, longstanding communities of color, or whether it's American slavery. Yeah, it existed. And that was unfortunate. But we ended it And as Maureen had said, because, you know, America triumphs, good always triumphs over evil, and things always get better. Well, that's not the way it works. And if that's the way we think about the American past, then when you get a moment of disruption, like in the contemporary, the election of Donald Trump, when so many people felt that perhaps Hillary Clinton, you go from African-American to a white woman, like this is the way America sort of flourishes and there's progress and no more white supremacy. And then that doesn't happen. They're shook because you have been telling us all along that things always get better, always gets better. So what happens when it doesn't?
We don't have any context for it.
No context whatsoever. So when we're talking about sort of getting American slavery right, you have to get it right. You have to teach it accurately and honestly, because if you don't, then you get everything else wrong. Right. So it's not just about sort of it's important to teach American slavery. It's important to teach American slavery because if you don't get it right, nothing else makes sense. Nothing else is accurate and nothing else is right.
And relegating it to a month, a year, Maureen Costello, is that part of the problem?
That is part of the problem. And it's not just, and it, good gracious, it would be wonderful if people did spend a month, a year on it. But
yeah,
they don't.
At least a month, a year. Right.
Right. In fact, what mostly happens during Black History Month is a celebration of heroes and inventions and accomplishments, and that's wonderful. But again, it's a distortion. This isn't for a separate month, and it isn't even a separate chapter. The story of America's racial history, let's put it that way, because it was born in slavery. But our racial history is part of every single chapter of American history. So you mentioned the interstate highway system and the way it broke up neighborhoods, but of course it also includes things like, I'm a New Yorker, Robert Moses designing these parkways with low overpasses that buses wouldn't be able to pass under. And the point was to keep the suburbs white. You had housing policy that
I mean,
made
there were
it,
memos written to this effect.
Absolutely. There were, you know, it was part of the plan that, you know, it would keep the hordes of inner city people out of the suburbs or out of the parks that were being built in the suburbs. There's FHA housing policy that starts in the New Deal that redlines districts and makes it impossible for people in impoverished neighborhoods who are seen as undesirable, which is mostly African Americans and immigrants, to get mortgages and move to the suburbs. So, you know, the typical things we talk about, the growth of the suburbs, and we never talk about that dark side. We talk about the New Deal, and we don't talk about the deal that FDR made with Southern Democrats to exclude African Americans. And we talk about, for instance, westward expansion without talking about the role of enslaved labor in clearing the land and creating the wealth. And, you know, so we have a lot of omissions.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about how to teach the history of slavery, the history of African Americans, the history of enslavement of African Americans in the United States. It's kind of fundamental to the history of the country itself. With me, Maureen Costello, director of the Southern Poverty Law Center Teaching Tolerance Division, and also Ohio State historian Hassan Jeffries. If you have a question or comment, we'd like to hear people about what you learned growing up. What do you remember growing up and what did you learn? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Sally in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sally.
Hello.
Go ahead. Tell us.
I grew up in Dublin, Ohio, and the way that racial history was presented, it was basically just slavery was bad, it was abolished, and everything's good now, which is absolutely not the case. And it wasn't really until in college I took an African-American history class that it opened my eyes that it wasn't good. I hadn't even heard of Emmett Till until that college class. And I just felt like it was a huge disservice to me and everyone else I went to school with that we weren't really taught the real history of our country.
You know, we've been hearing a lot about, Sally, thank you so much. We've been hearing a lot about those crummy old history books in Oklahoma lately, the teachers striking for better services and that kind of a thing. How do the textbooks get written in the first place? Where does the issue of slavery come up when it comes to putting together U.S. history books? Maureen Costello, what do we know?
Well, what we know, first of all, is that I taught American history in high school for 18 years. I've seen a lot of textbooks. And they tend to, you know, follow, well, there's Manifest Destiny and Jacksonian Democracy and at that, and maybe the Mexican War. And then at that point, you have to have a chapter on slavery. You do slavery, and then you jump to the sectional crisis of the 1850s. So there's that compartmentalization. There's a scholar at the Hutchins Center at Harvard. He just wrote a piece in the Journal of the Chronicle of Higher Ed that's fascinating. Harvard keeps an archive of old history textbooks, and he examined about 5,000 of them. And what he found is that the history textbooks, even coming from some of the great American historians of the 19th and 20th century, basically, you know, taught lessons of white supremacy. So the history textbooks have not caught up. And, you know, they're relying on sources that omitted black people. This is a short story, but I was in a Brooklyn Historical Society museum last week, and I was looking at an exhibit, and a writer writing about Brooklyn in 1800 said, its inhabitants are mainly Dutch and English. One out of five people in that borough, in that census, in that city, were African-American, but they were literally erased. And that's the problem. It's unerasing the history and bringing it back.
Hassan Jeffries, you've ended up an historian at Ohio State University. You majored in history and African American history at certain points. I mean, this is what you do. This is your stock and trade. It is your wheelhouse. What did you learn growing up?
I didn't learn this. Okay. You know, New York City public schools, in part. I can speak from personal experience that the textbooks that we used, and here's a technical term, were god awful. Because they did not do the things that we're talking about, and both by omission and by commission, right? How they were framing or how they were excluding American slavery and the experience of African Americans throughout. You know, I often talk about, people would ask me, you know, in graduate school and the like, so, you know, what interested you in history, and going around the seminar room or whatever, and my graduate student peers would say, you know, I had this wonderful teacher in high school, and I had this wonderful, it was what I learned. And they got to me and was like, yeah, it was what I wasn't learning. But yet I was, you know, living in New York City and seeing sort of segregation and inequality, and nothing was explaining it to me. I wasn't getting an explanation in the classroom. And so that led me down this path of trying to understand for myself and make sense of the past through history. So, no, I see it in a textbook. So we're actually getting it from, like, why do we continue to have these issues? One, it's because of what we're doing in the classroom and how we're teaching it. But it's also because of the textbooks. It's also because of how we talk about this outside of the classroom. So it really is coming from multiple angles.
We've heard stories recently about teachers who are trying to get, quote unquote, creative. They're trying to figure out ways to sensitize their students. That's one thing. They do these reenactments. They're doing role playing. I wondered if you guys could talk about that and what you see where the teachers have gone wrong on this.
I'd be happy to.
Sure, Maureen.
Yeah, we hear about it every year. The mock slave auction, the reenactment of the Middle Passage, something like that. And it's unfortunate. I think it also often comes from the best of intentions, but it's not good pedagogy. It's designed to, I'm not sure what it's designed to do. I think it's designed to evoke empathy.
Yeah.
The problem is, of course, that you can't actually recreate a traumatic experience in a classroom, nor should you want to. You know, the fact is many children are already living traumatic lives, and we wouldn't want to trigger them. I think where it really goes wrong, though, is that we do want to have some kind of role play, and we want kids to use their brains. And if they use their brains enough, their hearts will get engaged. We should engage kids in compelling questions and inquiries. I remember when I was teaching that students would like raise their hand and say, but why didn't they run away? Why didn't they resist? Why didn't they do this? That's what kids want to know. And that's the question we should be asking them. And then give them enough primary source material so that they can see what kinds of decisions and agency were available to people. That's a simulation that makes sense because it's intellectual.
What kind of primary sources are you talking about?
They could be letters. There's certainly, or for instance, runaway fugitive slave ads. Fugitive slave ads are usually very, very short and unwillingly give a window into the humanity of the people who have run away and kind of give you a sense of what was in their decision making. So they'll say something like, you know, this person ran away is known to have a wife and children in this area. And that tells you, oh, you know, this guy was separated from his wife, and like getting back with his family is more important than being whipped.
We have an email from Tori, and it's directed to Hassan Jeffries, OSU professor, OSU historian with me here in the studio. And I think it, I'm interested in getting what your reaction is to this. Asks, is Hassan going to point out that black chieftains sold their tribe members to Arabian slave trains for 3 bottles of whiskey? Where, when you hear a question like that, where do you think it's coming from, and how do you respond, Hassan?
Well, I think that's something that I hear, you know, quite often, and it really is both a distraction and a deflection. If you want to talk about the totality of transatlantic slave trade, then we can do that. And talk about points of origin and talk about the preexistence of a system of involuntary servitude that predated the transatlantic slave trade.
It goes all the way back to the beginnings of recorded history.
No, exactly. And so there's nothing surprising or shocking about that. It's important, though, to keep our focus on the context, right? When Europeans get involved in transporting and taking African people from the west coast of Africa to what we would call the New World, North America, and the like, we're talking about a radical change in a pre-existing system and networks of involuntary servitude. So this technical aspects of it that we can get into. But the point I want to make is that that is deflection. We're not talking about that. Like people raise that point to say what? That black folk are responsible and enslaved African people are equally responsible for the transatlantic slave trade. What does that have to do with James Madison and his decision as a founder to enslave and not free anyone? We're talking about the formation of this nation. We're talking about the persistence of slavery almost a century after the nation is formed, and the continuation of white supremacy and the legacy of slavery for a century and a half afterward. We can't get caught up in sort of deflection and this person did that, or there may have been an African in New Orleans who owned enslaved people that were part of his family. Let's talk about what we're really here to talk about.
We will continue our conversation. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about how the history of human enslavement is taught in American schools. Still with us is the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center Teaching Tolerance Division, Maureen Costello. And with me in the studio, Ohio State historian Hassan Jeffries. If you have a question or comment, we'd like to hear from people about what you learned when you were growing up as a kid. What did you learn, and when did you unlearn it, if ever? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, Maureen Costello, the caller from Dublin, Sally, I probably should have mentioned for the benefit of the rest, Dublin's one of the highest performing, wealthiest districts in the state, probably one of them, the wealthiest in the country. That's where the big money's going. I'm not saying that Dublin still has the same standards that Sally had when she was growing up, but is there any breakdown when it comes to school wealth or district wealth when it comes to the quality of education when it comes to the history of slavery in the United States?
I'd say that generally it's kind of poorly taught everywhere. However, we did look at breaking down students by urban, suburban, and rural in our survey, and in general, the suburban students did marginally better on the exams. I think that they have more access, for instance, to AP U.S. history courses and are more likely to go into depth.
Does that resonate with you, Hassan? That makes sense?
Yeah, it does. And the emphasis on marginally better.
Right. Don't get excited.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. An email from Brad, he says, I think there could be many reasons for students not understanding the reality and the historical impact of slavery. There may be some bias in the teacher's approach. A creative approach to this difficult subject is what is needed, and it takes more effort than a teacher probably wants to build into a lesson plan. The subject is fraught with landmines, and it seems that even trying to address things like that causes an outcry from parents. What about that? What did you hear from teachers, Maureen Costello, when you surveyed them?
The thing is, most teachers actually want to do this well, and that's what we heard from them. They said that they don't get a lot of support from, they didn't like their textbooks. 58% said their textbooks were not adequate. Many of them said that they don't have a lot of great support from either their districts or their states in terms of offering the resources. So they want better resources, first of all, and we've tried to supply some of those. The other is that, you know, most of them actually did not talk about parental resistance. They are dealing more with the issues in the classroom of kids resisting sometimes. And what we always say is that you want to bring parents in a way and let them know what you're planning to be teaching and find out if they have any thoughts about it. Always great to bring those folks into the tent. And we also think that it's really important to get very practiced at talking about race and setting some ground rules for how you're going to do that in the classroom.
Joellen and Galloway, you're on the air. Hi, Joellen.
Hello.
Joellen, could I ask you to just pull your mouth away from the phone?
Sure. Is that better?
Oh, heavens to Betsy, it's better. Yes. Go ahead.
Yes. My comment was that school boards actually decide what's going to be put in textbooks eventually.
School boards?
The editors, yes, the school board has to approve the textbook, and they actually can have things taken out that have been put in textbooks before they purchase them. So I think until we get more diversified school boards, we're going to continue to have these problems.
Okay, that's an interesting point of view. I mean, it's an interesting insight.
Well, I mean, school boards certainly play a role in sort of curriculum and content. But when it comes to textbooks, it's important to understand that textbooks, I mean, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, and local school boards aren't deciding or talking to sort of textbook companies saying, hey, you got to take this out. I mean, the textbooks are putting in or responding to the demands of the largest school districts in the country. Texas plays an outsized role in the content of textbooks. And Texas can be kind of crazy. And we know that. And so we see textbooks reflecting some of the desires and wishes of what's happening in Texas versus what the desires and wishes of people on the ground in other states, New York and California. So I think we have to be, you know, there's limits to what in local school boards can do just because of the way the textbook industry functions and operates.
Email from Angel says, narratives from formerly enslaved people would be a great teaching resource. There is a collection of narratives from people that settled in Ohio after the Civil War. It was interesting to read the recollections of their lives here in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
That's that kind of primary resource that you're talking about, Maureen Costello?
Yes, it is. In fact, you know, we published this framework for teaching hard history that has, for teachers, basically, that says, you know, here's what we think you should teach, and here are some ways to teach it. And everything that we suggest is connected to either a primary source or an online resource. The wonderful thing about the age we're living in is that new materials are being released constantly. And, of course, they're not new. They're just being, it's like that fugitive slave database. There's a database where you can look up those ads. There's another one that is the transatlantic Middle Passage database where you can actually see the way the traffic runs. So we don't have to rely on textbooks as much, which is wonderful. And those first-person accounts are deeply moving and they tell you and students get a lot of it out of them.
Yeah, Hassan.
I would say, in addition to sort of primary sources and that which is available online, and the Southern Poverty Law Center's report, which isn't just the problems that we have in the classroom,
but solutions.
But solutions, mm-hmm. You know, a good portion of what's captured in the report is reflected in sort of depth and detail and sort of ways to go forward with a book out of University of Wisconsin Press, Understanding and Teaching American Slavery. With Southern Poverty Law Center, we have a podcast that talks about drawing on some of those authors and talks about the different ways to actually teach this history accurately and effectively. I think film and movies, we're in a very unique moment in American cinema when you think about the last really 5 years
or
so.
Amazing, right?
And the powerful films that you can use, 12 Years a Slave and so many others in the classroom, put in context, mm-hmm. but they are ways, but they're teaching tools that can be used to teach this history accurately and effectively, and to use these tools, primary sources, films, documentary films, of course, as springboards into this subject and to ways to teach and talk about this history.
Eddie in Lancaster, you're on the air. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, Ann. I was just calling to respond to my own experience. I live in Lancaster, Ohio, and I've been a public school teacher for 20 years. But growing up in Jefferson County on the other side of Ohio, this was my experience. Slavery was bad. Yay, Abe Lincoln. Like that's what I got out of it. Were it not for instance, my mother, who shoved things like Uncle Tom's Cabin at me, and my mother was educated and answered questions and told me about things, I would have been ignorant for so long, and embarrassingly so. I think that the district I teach in now, Lancaster City School, I think we do a good job, but my own personal experience growing up in the 70s and 80s, it was just abysmal. I'm embarrassed at how little I knew, especially once I realized how little I knew.
What, Maureen Costello, what sort of questions would you ask someone like Eddie on the phone right now for your survey? She thinks she's doing a good job. She thinks they do a good job.
Well, I'd love to know, does your district kind of introduce the topic? When does your district introduce the topic, and what kind of support does it give to teachers to teach it well?
Eddie?
Well, I had a son I'm at the high school, so I can't speak mm-hmm. entirely for the younger grades, but I have a son who's in the district right now, and I can remember him coming home and talking about that issue, and that in itself just makes me feel better because, okay, somebody's talking about this, and I can't tell you specifically what they're, but I know that our district is really good with, like, for instance, we use a lot of technology. We have a program, for instance, where you can go to this website. And since everybody has a one-to-one, you know, device, they can do this. And you can tour an old plantation house. And when you click on things, it tells you these are where this is one of the jobs the slaves have to do, you know. And then you can go back and look at the slave quarters and actually look at what they looked like. And these are the hallways the slaves had to walk through because nobody wanted to see them. And it, just really cool stuff like that that I just so badly wish that we had had growing up. And mm-hmm. the perspective that the kids have now, even though I know we're not all doing a stellar job, we really are trying. Well, I teach American Lit, and I show them passages. I show them clips from the movie Roots where they're on the slave ship, and they're throwing up, and they're laying in there, you know, and kids are just mouth hanging open. And I'm like, yeah, that's how it was. And I know they're probably getting it history, too, but I figure, you know what, it's not going to hurt them to see and hear it again because it was really awful, and people need to talk about it.
Eddie, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Ann.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Let's see, Mona Lisa, you're on the air. Hi, Mona Lisa.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just a little bit disagreeing about what the professor mentioned earlier that, you know, when we're talking about the history of slavery that formed the country, mm-hmm. we also have to, I really believe that we have to talk about everything part, not just someone like, for example, like James Madison. But, you know, I mean, like, I agree that we should never forgotten about the slavery and we should eradicate it. But also, in my personal opinion, we have to, you know, we cannot use that as a tool to instigate. And there is so many instigation that happened.
I don't think I really am following you, Mona Lisa. I thought you were going to talk about the history of Asian slaves.
Yes, and then also, but, you know, like the Asian slaves also, they were never mentioned. It's always about, you know, the history of, you know, the black slave, the slave that came from Africa. But then again, you know, like that is other races too. So, but mm-hmm. it was never mentioned anywhere in the school text or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever.
Okay. Oh, somehow we lost. Sorry. I don't know how that happened, but anyways, there is competition.
Well, I wouldn't call it competition. I would say, listen, we're talking about American slavery. We're talking about enslaved Africans, and those are enslaved Africans and American slavery is at the foundation of America. Now, we do actually talk about most kids are introduced to slavery in America at a very early age, but it's not American slavery. It's biblical slavery. And that has a different sort of nuance to it, right? I mean, it's sort of, it's not as brutal. People sort of are involved early on, you know. I mean, so that actually informs how most people in America think about the institution of slavery if they're not taught about American slavery. Mm. I mean, so it's not that, you know, we're not introduced to it or not talked about it in its various ways, but it is important that we talk specifically about the enslavement of African people in the transatlantic slave trade and in America, because that is the foundation for everything else that proceeds in American history.
I would add to that, too. I think that when we do this thing of, you know, lots of people were mistreated in this country, there in our history, there's no doubt about it. But we have this tendency to think that our history is just a lot of individual stories. And what is different about American slavery is that it was institutional. You know, Hassan talks about it as being foundational. It's institutional. We weren't so shocked by the fact that kids thought that the Emancipation Proclamation ended slavery, not the 13th Amendment. Much more shocking was that only 1 in 5 understood that the Constitution, as written in 1789, enshrined slavery in a number of ways. We, you know, and again, you know, thinking about the African slave trade, it's the policies and the massive industry that developed. What kinds of choices are we making at institutional levels to create this thing? Because we're still making choices today. And if we don't teach kids to think about how we make policy choices and the impact they have on people, then it just gets down to, oh, this was really bad for that person.
Is there anywhere that Maureen Costello people can go to learn more about what the Southern Poverty Law Center Teaching Tolerance Division has done with regards to this study?
Absolutely. If they go to www.tolerance.org and click on our frameworks page, they will find Teaching Hard History. They'll find the report there, a link to the podcast, the frameworks, and a variety of other items that we have as well. So, and the project is growing. We, as Hassan mentioned, we're going to do a kind of K-12 scope and sequence soon. We have a library of primary source documents, so there's lots there.
And also, Maureen Costello, you and Hassan Jeffries will be at the Bexley Public Library for a public conversation and discussion about teaching American slavery. That's coming up on Wednesday, April 18th. So for more information, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org. We can continue the conversation there. Maureen Costello, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Maureen Costello is the director of the Southern Poverty Law Center Teaching Tolerance Division. And Hassan Jeffries, Ohio State historian. As always, thank you so much for helping out.
Thanks for having us.
Hassan Jeffries, again, Ohio State historian. He's a regular guest on All Sides. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, assistant producer Kyle McKinnon, All Sides interns Michael Lee, Alexander Havolchik, and Martin Coleman, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DeCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for your calls and your emails. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.